podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
The best, the number one, greatest innovation the game has brought in, 4020.
Welcome to 4020 Not Live, the return of the everyone's favourite pre-recorded rugby league podcast. Well, I can't even say that because everyone else is pre-recorded. But we have had people saying, why aren't you on? I'm going to have to do washing and listen to inferior podcasts and music and stuff, which is disappointing. But there you go. Phil Kaplan is here. James Child is here. And another busy week of stuff. And I guess we start not with the Challenge Cup, and we'll talk about the draw halfway through the Challenge Cup because that's how it works these days. But Phil, what the directors of rugby do? Because there's no answer to this question, is there?
What do they do? Well, I'd like to see the job description, what the qualifications are to do it. I mean, obviously, we're talking about the situation at Hull where Richie Myler retires from playing at 2 o'clock and at 5 past is appointed the director of rugby at Hull, which was heavily rumoured over the weekend. It does seem bizarre, just from the point of view of, at the moment, Hull look like a club that need a very experienced hand at the tiller. They're clearly in quite a lot of turmoil on and off the field at the moment. And you would think that someone who's been there, seen it, done it, is the person that they need to guide them through these choppy waters. So whatever the rights and wrongs of Tony Smith's regime, he does have those runs on the board. He's summarily dismissed. And I'm told that as of Monday last week, he still was in a job. So it was relatively quick. It's not something that's been planned. And then they decide to go for someone who may well turn out to do the kind of job that Sam Burgess is doing at Warrington, which I'm sure we'll talk about. But someone who has absolutely no experience in the role that they're being asked to fulfil, which includes the appointment of a coach who's going to be, I would imagine, a lot more older and experienced than they are. So you look at it from two points of view. One is, what is Adam Pearson trying to achieve? And you would think that behind the Richie Myler appointment is some degree of investment in the club. Where that comes from, we're not 100% sure, but we know Richie Myler's familial line at the moment. And whilst I don't necessarily think Andrew Thurkill will directly invest in Hull, he may be facilitating investment in Hull, which might be behind, well, if I do that, you could do something for someone who is currently with my daughter. We don't know that. We do know Mr. Thurkill is watching the Masters in America this weekend. But I think the other thing about that is, how do you sell this concept to the Hull fans? And that's the bit, I think you'd have to be a Hull fan to answer that. But some of the correspondence I've had with some avid Hull fans over the course of the day is they are just completely mystified. The thing about any business, whether it's rugby or what James does in the real world, is leadership is the most important thing for an organisation to move forward, and credibility of leadership, that the people above you feel that they can teach you things and progress your career because they're experienced enough so to do. So how that quite is going to work at Hull, I don't know. To me, it just seems a bizarre appointment.
I think when you look, if you look from... I don't, this is a newly created position, isn't it? Hull have not had somebody in this position. But, when you look at the normal world, the real world, as you put it, Phil, and you were applying for a job, there is a job description. And then you put an application together and you submit an application. And in that, you look at the job description, you look at your skill set, your experience, and then you justify why somebody may look to select you for interview, never mind appoint you. And then if you're selected for interview, you then have to go through a process where people ask you questions and you demonstrate those skills and experience. I don't know how, and this is no disrespect to Richard Myler as a person, but how does he demonstrate that he has the necessary skills and experience in this role when he's clearly not done it before? I'm not aware of whether he's coached before. Has he coached juniors and has been part of an academy setup? No. So, how on earth do you then sell that as a decision to your fans that this is the best solution? You had probably Super League's most experienced ever coach who you've just got rid of with a good track record and in return, you're bringing somebody in that's never done this role before, never mind this role, but in any form of coaching, certainly at this level before. And then, as you rightly say, he then has to seek the services of a new head coach. It just seems bizarre to me.
I think the other thing about it is that you obviously are going through a period where the players are lacking in confidence, which again is why I think it relates to what Warrington are doing at the moment. You know, Sambridge's gone into that dressing room and decided what needs rebuilding, but he's gone in with an aura about him. So that a lot of the young players who currently are leading the vanguard in the change at Warrington are absolutely bought into the fact that he has a reputation and he's got something about him that they can at least give chance to see if he can take them in the right direction. Richie Myler hasn't got those runs on the board. He might have 400 appearances to his name, but I'm not sure he walks into an organisation at any level, let alone a senior management level, and is able to take the staff with him. I wish him all the success in the world, but I just think he's almost being handed a poison chalice. It's like his playing career is coming to an end. He needs to do something. There is something to be done. We've never really seen in rugby league a director of rugby role and what that entails and how that ever works properly. With Motu Tony, they had a head of recruitment and that worked really, really well. And for whatever reason, you know, that was dispensed with and he moved back home. And that may well have happened anyway, but he clearly was bringing the right kind of player in. And that was when Hull were winning trophies. To bring someone in who hasn't even got that experience or those connections in the market just seems bizarre to me.
When John Keir was director of rugby at Wakefield, we're under, oh, above Chris Chester, not under Chris Chester, you got the feeling that he was more of a guiding hand for a younger coach, say. And now Chris Chester, is he director of rugby at Lee? I can't remember what his job title is, but he's somewhere above Adrian Lamm in the hierarchy, isn't he? And he'll be a different kind of director of rugby than John Keir was. But without knowing what the role is, because no one seems to know what a director of rugby is it a general manager's role? Is it recruitment, as you say? Who's he going to appoint as the first coach? Or is Adam Pearson going to do that? When Kevin Sinfield was director of rugby at Leeds, what exactly did Kevin Sinfield do there? Because he didn't last long in that role, did he? As it turns out.
And I think that's the problem, that we don't really have that role in rugby league. It's very much a European football role. And even in soccer over here, it doesn't always translate because culturally we're quite different. So I think, yeah, you'd think that a director of rugby is not only going to be, I mean, logic would say the coach he appoints will be older than him, but yet in the hierarchy, and it's not just about age, he is going to be above him in the management structure. I just think the whole thing seems a little bit rushed. And what it really needed was more of a statement from Hull as to why he was the man for the job. But also, I think the other thing that's been really weird, and I don't know if this is a criticism of where Hull are at the moment, but if we've heard since the weekend that Richie Myler was going to be in the role and the statement says he's already started, why was every single picture of him on social media and even announcing it, wearing a Leeds kit? You know, I'm not having a go at anybody there. I just don't think it's very professional and it's not a great start to his reign where, you know, every news story that's going to be out there today shows him wearing another club's colours.
Particularly when he's at York as well, or has been until 5 minutes before the announcement. I don't know. I just think the whole thing's bizarre. I mean, you know, speaking from what I understand, the appointment process was for the head of match officials, for example. That was a rigorous process that followed a process that was undertaken by Tony Sutton when he was appointed. And I know there was criticism about it's a job for the boys there with the RFL, but you know, that was a rigorous process in terms of numerous stages of an interview, presentation, etc., and a job description that you apply against, and you submit experience. And I go back to the same point. It just, to me, you can only draw one conclusion, and that Andrew is putting some money in somewhere, and this is the kickback. But how, as a whole FC fan, you rationalize that, I just don't know. But I get appointing somebody on a long-term basis who takes a long-term view, and maybe you bring a coach in that it's maybe coaches are sometimes more short-sighted because they're paid by results, and that actually you need somebody on, that takes a longer-term view. But if you get to a decision about a single player, we have got the ability to bring in X player. Coach says no, director of rugby says yes. Who makes that decision? I think that's one of the unknowns, isn't it? It just seems a strange scenario.
And I can see that Adam Pearson perhaps wants to withdraw from being solely in charge of everything, and I get that, and he needs external investment, and this might be an avenue to bring some in. But at the moment, and again, the proof of the pudding and all that, Hull could go on a 15-match unbeaten run, make the playoffs and win at Old Trafford from here. Unlikely, I know, but we're almost passing judgment without knowing the facts. What we need is a press conference in the next few days with Richie Myler and probably Adam Pearson alongside him, both outlining why, if you're a Hull fan, this is the right decision.
But why not do that when you announce the decision? Why not call a press conference and invite the media? Surely that's what you do, isn't it?
That's what I don't understand.
I'm sure he'll be on Radio Humberside soon enough or somewhere. I mean, it's one of those odd stories where it leaks out early, which obviously this did. And there's two parts of it. Obviously, there's the investment bit, which has been denied, and the Myler bit, which has happened. And you wonder how that leaks out in the first place and for what reason. Because it's been, I don't say universally negative on social media, because social media is negative about everything, but it's an appointment which, as we've said, comes with a lot of questions, none of which we've got answers to, about his experience, who else was in the running for the role, what about this money that's coming in. And Hull, they're on the front of the magazine there, they are. There's the Tony Smith. Wasn't he director of rugby at Warrington for a bit and had a coach under him? You've mentioned Sam Purgis, Phil, and obviously he's in a different role at Warrington. He is the head coach. And we speculated on the programme last year. He's coming in with no first grade experience or whatever. I know he coached some, Russell Crowe's team in whatever league it was. But this is over a head coach. This is someone who you'd expect to be, as you're saying, older than the head coach, perhaps, a wise old head. It just, there's so many questions that no one's answered yet, and the whole fans will want answers sooner rather than later. And whatever happens on Friday when they play St Helens, we won't know what's going on before then.
The Warrington model's working on two counts. One, clearly Sam is having an influence, and part of that is investment in youth, which I don't think has happened enough under previous regimes. But his director of rugby is Gary Chambers, who has brought a lot of these young players through the system, who had a spell as head coach at the end of last year. So whatever culture is and however we describe it, got to know intimately what was good about it and what needed changing. So that now is a partnership where you can look at a result like they've just had against St Helens and say, we can see reasons why that change is perhaps more substantial than it has been in the past. And the model that they're using ultimately looks like it could be successful. I don't think you can levy any of that at this appointment. I don't know how you can have a younger director of rugby than even some of the playing staff. There's going to be some very difficult decisions that need to be made at Hull about players that are coming to the end of their contract, which presumably is going to be undertaken by Richie Myler. But in some respects, it's going to be a very hard conversation to have when not only is he younger than some of the players that he may be talking to, but these contemporaries of them as well. And that's just such a tough conversation to have.
And now I've just remembered, because across the city at Hull Kingston Rovers, however many years ago it was, what was Jamie Peacock's job there? What job title did they give him above the coach? Because it was some kind of general manager or director of rugby role, wasn't it? And didn't work out for him there. But that's not a criticism of Jamie Peacock. That's just how it happened at Hull Kingston at the time.
I think it goes back exactly to how we started the conversation and the example that James gave us about the match officials. You have to see the job description. You then need to make a decision as to which candidates are out there. And how does their CV best fit with the role that you want them to do? This seems to have been done the other way around. There's someone who's been made available, they've been put in position, and now we're all wondering about what job it is they're going to be doing and how they're going to do it and whether it can work. And it just seems indecent haste in some respects.
James, why isn't rugby like the real world? Why aren't these places run like real businesses. Can you explain that?
Well, I think the point, I think one of the points is that it hasn't he referenced something at about £5 million over the last few years in terms of what they've lost. That probably tells its own story, isn't it? It does. It's not the real world. You know, what business is there that continues going where you've made a loss of £5 million over the last, well, I don't know how many years he referenced, Phil, but, you know, that's where you wonder, isn't it, that people get involved in sport because it's a passion and they're prepared to throw money, good money after bad, on a passion project. But one would imagine that that patience is probably wearing thin. And not just the patience, but the bank balance at some point wears a little bit low. And I suspect that's where Adam Pearson's getting to. I don't know his finances clearly, but the sense that you get from the outside looking in is that he's looking for external investment, isn't he? And potentially looking for a way out. And the best way to do that is drive some success. But I'm not sure this is the answer. I think Phil hit the nail on the head, really. You've been presented with an opportunity, but why do you not cast the net wide, advertise a role, and who see who comes forward, and then you select from there? That's about long-term strategic thinking. So if it was such a good idea, why did they not have this idea when they brought Tony Smith in the first place? Have somebody in this role, but it's not, oh my goodness, we've hit the crisis button, because the t-shirts have been printed at 4020 Towers, and we need to make a decision. That, you know, are we keeping Tony Smith? Well, on Monday maybe we are, but by Wednesday he's gone or whatever, and then Tex Hoy's gone and New Brown's gone, and what do we do? Who knows? They may have a coach lined up. I'd be surprised if they don't have a coach lined up, because, you know, most clubs, when they sack a coach, they've got somebody waiting in the wings to come in. But I would hazard a guess they'll have to pay Tony Smith off, and there'll be a limited budget there for a coach potentially. Are they going to look at somebody lower down in the game here? Thinking of what's his name, Richard Hobb, say at Doncaster, somebody who's been at the club, knows the club, etc. But then, if you know the club and know the culture, is that the right kind of person? Do you not need somebody from the outside? But that was Tony Smith, wasn't it, to change culture? To me, they just look like they're going around in circles.
I think the other problem that they've got is that there isn't a lot out there at the moment, and that when you know, I know that Adam has disputed the chart that Sky put up about the level of investment salary cap wise. But I think we all know that if you're looking to change your squad 7 games into the new season, there isn't going to be much out there. Now, the only people you're going to get from the NRL are going to be people that aren't cutting it in, you know, the opening rounds of their season. Do you want more of those in your club? You've got 2 or 3 of those already. You're not going to get a coach that is anything other than been discarded with by a club relatively recently. I can't think of anybody in the British game at the moment who, you know, sometimes you look at football and you think, yeah, well, it's the Sam Allardyce principle, isn't it? There's always somebody out there that is out of work, and you know, Alan Pardew is going to walk in any minute and take over that job because he's available. And there's a pressure on teams that don't perform because there's an obvious candidate waiting in the wings.
You know, maybe he's Alan Pardew.
What's Alan? Maybe it's Neil Warnock, who is renowned for his firefighting. But if you go and get, let's say, Justin Holbrook, that isn't going to be a cheap option. Not at this stage, particularly when he's shrewd enough to know that if he's moving back over this side of the world, he can command a premium because they need him more than he needs them. And if he's bringing his family back across, there's, you know, lots of relocation expenses involved in all of that. To me, I don't get this knee-jerk reaction. It's been a terrible start to the season, but to dispense with somebody who has all the experience to turn that around, and all of the press releases up to now and all of the pre-season was all about Tony Smith is the man and he's got a plan and we're not going to rush it and we need to bring through some of our young players, to then say we're getting rid of one of our overseas players who we probably shouldn't have signed in the first place because a year and a bit into his contract, it hasn't really worked. And another one who was probably one of their marquee players after, what, half a dozen games, and get rid of the coach, and bring in somebody who's half the age of the coach they've just got rid of. Like, it just smacks of panic.
Panic on the streets of Humberside, is that what we're saying? They play St Helens on Friday night, one of three games on Friday. Kev has been on asking me to say, should Wellens be sacked? It looks as if the fans are turning against him. Myself, I would give him until the end of the season and see how it goes and then sack him. That's Kev, who's a Saints fan. Obviously not happy with the fact that they've... did they win anything last year? Oh, they won the World Club Championship. They won that, but they're out of the cup
now. That's all they won.
That's all they won. They went to Penrith and won. They made a film about it, which I still haven't watched, but they didn't win the Challenge Cup. They didn't get to the Grand Final, and now they're out of the Challenge Cup. The men are out of the Challenge Cup again, and yeah, they've lost to Warrington. It's all hell's breaking loose in Merseyside or whatever the part of the world where St Helens is.
Right, I think you have to be crazy to make a decision like that, and I don't think St Helens are that kind of club. That's my opinion, and certainly they're not in crisis. Those t-shirts can wait, can't they, for St Helens? That's for sure.
I think there's a couple of things with that as well. You know, what was it, 2.5-3 weeks ago when they beat Wigan on Good Friday, he was going to be knighted. Now, you know, they've lost to Catalan, who themselves are not bad when you look at their form this year. We'll obviously talk about what a great job Huddersfield did on them this weekend. And they've lost to a Warrington team that got their tactics absolutely bang on. But the other thing that St Helens are starting to have to do, and it's happened to other clubs, is they're having to manage transition. They're losing some of the top players, and some of the other top players are getting slightly older and at some point will need to be replaced. And that is, again, a longer term project. And if you suffer two defeats and then you say, right, well, the coach has got to go, you have to put trust in the fact that more often than not, St Helens get this right. And there will be a period of time where they're not quite as dominant as they've been over the last 4 or 5 years, because that is salary cap sport. But stick with what you've got. Stick with some of the kids that are coming through. We already know that there's going to be people like Tommy Makinson moving on at the end of the season on the back of James Roby, Louis McCarthy, Scars. But there is going to be change. And in that period of change, you cannot maintain the winning standard that you've had for 4 or 5 years. They are still a benchmark team. And the difference between, I suspect, what Eamon McManus is looking at and what Adam Pearson was looking at is Eamon has had a succession plan by having Paul Wellens as the assistant to Justin Holbrook and Christian Wolfe. And he needs to do things his own way and he needs to work things out his own way. But you cannot expect him to have access to the same degree of squad and confidence and style of play that the others had. But you would be foolish to look at. Well, I don't think Eamon McManus would even, you know, have it as an agenda on a board meeting, to be honest.
I mean, they appear to be struggling in attack at the moment, so then it's perfect to play Hull this week and rack up all the points that they haven't scored in recent weeks and give the players a chance to work out what they're doing. It's not as if their coaching staff isn't full of creative players or whatever, is it? It's not as if they're full of prop forwards or anything, so... April? It's April. They tend to win grand finals.
Part of the issue is that they're not scoring enough points. But, you know, apart from the Warrington game, which obviously we'll talk about and make, massive kudos to the way Warrington played that game, their defence has been superb. You know, two or three weeks ago, people were writing articles about it's arguably the best defence of the summer era, and they were conceding, less than 10 points a game, which hadn't been done in the first 7 games of the season. Most of that hasn't changed. They had a really bad performance, which was best illustrated, I thought. They managed to get themselves 8-7 ahead, which you thought this is going to be a typical St Helens performance for the next 35 minutes. They're going to play the right place in the field. They're probably going to close the game down. They're going to rely on this brilliant defence that they've got. From the kickoff, Johnny Lomax makes a totally uncharacteristic mistake.
And seemed to blame his teammates for that, which was odd.
But from that moment onwards, it was almost as if the dreaded word momentum changed. You know, Warrington scored a try on the back of the dropout, and that was it. Lomax will make that mistake once in a career, probably. But that doesn't mean you sack the coach.
It's all going well for Warrington then, who, Sam Burgess, he's the greatest coach ever, probably be the South coach this time next year now. because Jason Demetriou is not getting the sack. But the Australians, they say Demetriou, don't they? Have we got it wrong all the time? Have we got it wrong all the time? Or is that just Australians? I don't know. Could have asked him while he was here. But Warrington, obviously, into the semi-finals. Let me bring you the draw. It's Hull County, Wigan and Huddersfield versus Warrington in the men's. In the women's, Saints versus York and Wigan versus Leeds. We don't know where they're going to be played yet, but possibly by the time that you hear this, you might know.
It would be a good idea, because Headingley's not available because there's Test cricket.
Oh.
I'd be very, very surprised if Wigan and Hull County wasn't at Huddersfield, subject to Football League and where, you know, I think the season's finished, and I don't know whether they're having their pitch ripped up. And you'd be very surprised as well, I would think, if the other game, Huddersfield and Warrington, wasn't at St Helens, which is a bespoke rugby league ground. But of course, they'll now announce it while we're recording this, and it will be
Leon Doncaster,
you know, Penzance and Edinburgh.
Being to lose ahead of the England France semi final, but Warrington, everyone's starting now with the it's going to be their year thing. But again, it is far too early. We know it's not Hull's year. That we can confirm that. And London. And probably Castleford. But Warrington, they've still got a long way to go. Although it would be, you know, if they get their first piece of silverware in the Burgess era within the first few months, that'd be very good for them going on forward, of course.
Because people were saying that they'd had two tests so far and they failed those tests because they played Catalan twice and they'd lost twice. So they've now had an additional test and they passed that one. But so does that make them now unbeatable? It's just, you know, they performed well on the day, didn't they? And you know, they certainly seem to be improved on last year. They seem to be playing for Sam Burgess. Whatever he's doing there behind the scenes with the players seems to be working. But, you know, I'm pretty sure he'd be saying that we're not the finished article and we've got some improvement in us. You know, they'll have tougher tests, I'm sure, as the season goes along. But yeah, it should be two good semi-finals. I mean, the Hull KR Wigan game is a repeat of last year's semi-final that went to Golden Point, isn't it? So, you know, that augurs for a cracking semi-final.
And Matty Ashton, of course, scored the world's greatest try this week until another one he scored next week in Australia or whatever. So it's good, because when he was playing for Warrington at Wakefield last year in a game in which their team was dreadful, and bearing in mind, we know how bad Wakefield were last year, he was one of the players who you felt actually did care about what was going on the field. I'm not saying all the rest of the players didn't, but you can tell he did. So I'm glad to see he's getting his success at the moment.
I think care's the word. I think that Sam has got them to care about what it means to play for Warrington. He's also giving a core of young players who are Warrington-based the opportunity to represent the club, and you know I thought Leon Hayes probably had his best game. He's had some really good games up to now, but that was the first one where he's really been up against players who have got much more experience than him in the big games, and in many respects outplayed them. I think that, you know, Connor Wrench didn't get too many mentions, but he seems to have come on leaps and bounds. Fewless and Ashton clearly care. But Sam Burgess, because of who he is and the aura he's got, has made some tough decisions. So he looked at Sam Cassiano and said, I'm all about work rate, and you might have some brilliant offloading skills, but the stats might say you're in and out of matches. Looked at Gil Dodson and said, we want to be pretty disciplined in what we do. I've looked at the stats. Maybe you give away a few too many penalties. You know, he's gone to Stephen Ratchford, who not only passionately cares, but in some respects has held the club together in lean years, and said, I'm not going to play you every week. You know, I'm because of the team that I'm going to play, and I want Matt Duffy to be a better fullback, but he is going to be my fullback. And obviously we've got Toby King back, who's just won a grand final. I don't know where I'm going to play you, and I'm not going to play you every week. So that's a tough call. That's the kind of call that Richie Myler is going to have to make at Hull with certain players. But because it's Sam Burgess, I think he's very good at explaining the whole is bigger than the individual parts, then it's sort of starting to work for them. I just thought that, you know, everybody quite rightly focused on George Williams, and this is a different George Williams. We scratched our heads over the last, 18 months saying, how come George Williams is so good when he plays for England, but he can't replicate it at Warrington? And I think Sam Burgess has gone in and said that I want him to be a different sort of leader. just don't want you to take the armband, and because you're the captain of England, you assume the responsibility of being the captain of Warrington. So, right, these are the things I want you to do if you're going to be the guy on the field that represents me. And you quite rightly, the tackle on Bennison put the ball inside, didn't he? And the tackle that prevented a try. That was George Williams, wasn't it? Just before half time. That could have been a turning point in the game. When you come off at half time, the rest of the team goes, that's a captain's lead. He's not only behaving like a captain, but he's pulled off a tackle that means we have to, at the very least, follow his lead. Fantastic. You know, and if merely having Sam Burgess there has got you a 1.5 times George Williams, that's also why it's working. It's not the finished article yet, but that was as impressive a performance at St Helens as I've seen in a long, long time.
Because I'm too cheap and this Zoom's call is going to end in a minute, let's quickly cover Castleford versus Wigan, because there's nothing to say. A, none of us have seen it, obviously. But B, dearie me, 60 points to 6 for Wigan. That's a scoreline we might have seen in the Women's Challenge Cup, which we'll talk about later. But I guess for Castleford, they've got bigger... Have they got bigger fish to fry? Well, who knows with AMG points? I don't know.
They play each other again this week, don't they, in the league? So... Not just the way it goes, isn't it? But I think there was a bad injury for Willie Issa in that game. So, you know, best wishes to him.
Yeah, he's a lot fitter than I was when I did my ankle. So hopefully he comes back soon. But at least they've got some nice new chairs at the jungle as well. So, you know, it's good to see improvements going on.
Cass had 15 out. And I think they're certainly going to lose at least one to the disciplinary for that Issa challenge. I haven't seen it, so... I can't really comment on it, but it would appear that the grading that it's got, it's not suddenly going to be downgraded to one match. So they're doing it tough at the moment, Cass, but I'm not sure we're surprised by that. I think, again, Liam Marshall, 4 tries, you know, it obviously is one of the form winners in the competition. And there will be sterner tests for Wigan and Castleford, as you say, probably the chairs are more important than the results at the moment.
Footage has emerged of the tackle, which it tends to do when highlights of a match are released. But that's the... I don't want to criticise the media. I'm part of the media. What am I trying to do? Well, I've been very nice in my column this month about everything, apart from the boat race, which obviously should be banned.
And here's Litton now putting the kick in downfield.
40-20.
What's in 40-20 magazine this month, Phil, even though I'm holding it in front of me?
Revamp of the Challenge Cup.
Good idea.
Yeah, what do we do with that? I think there's the whole situation clearly we knew was breaking. We didn't think Tony would necessarily lose his job at the time that we put him on the front cover. But I think the article that's been written by Trevor Gibbons, who's a vice president at Hull and not only a fine writer, but a long-standing FC fan, is valid now, irrespective of who's in charge or not. It's more about where the club has fallen over the last, 8 years. So I think that's an interesting piece. There's a nice article about up-and-coming referee Liam Rush. Can't remember who wrote that. I just think it's one of those issues where we got to cover a lot of ground over a lot of different subjects. The you know, revamp of what the Championship and League One is going to look like and whether that will work or not. Who's going to be this extra team in League One if there is going to be one? And again, is it going to be a pin in a map exercise which is destined to fail if history is anything to go by? The first time Wigan won the Challenge Cup, Mr. Latham writes about, because obviously they are not only the Challenge Cup I've got through this weekend, but it was 100 years ago that they first won it, so that sort of seemed appropriate. So yeah, I'd like to think there's a lot in there. There's a great caricature of Sean Long, if nothing else.
In fact, no, I'm not going to show it on screen. You have to buy the magazine to see it. While we're talking about referees, I can't but toot my own horn, or our own horn, rather. In 2018, when we were on TalkSport, one of our guests on the short-lived Rugby League on TalkSport 2 programme was Tara Jones, who it turns out is now she's the first woman to do something, but we're not quite sure exactly what because of the World Cup. But she refereed a game. And James, I can see no reason why women can't referee men's rugby league. There's no reason why anyone can't do it, is there?
No, absolutely not. It's just that we've not had many female match officials in the system, really. That's been the main reason. And even Tara's own probably officiating journey has been stalled a little bit potentially by her successful playing career, which has prioritised that. I think, you know, probably this season is probably doing it officiating a little bit more than she probably has done over the last few years. So, which is great for the game, really. And it's not just about getting female match officials to officiate female or women's rugby league. It's getting female match officials, and the RFL, I think it was last year, sort of specifically set up a pathway for the recruitment and retention and development of female match officials, which I thought was a great initiative. I think they set some targets around that as well. And no doubt we'll look at that as part of our, my role on the inclusion board, to ensure that we're recruiting more female match officials, which is commensurate with, you know, more female people playing the game. So we want better representation, but, you know, fantastic for Tara to get that accolade. It was, press release was actually rewritten in the week, and I noticed. So apparently, in fact, Sarah Bennison was a member of my referee society, Dewsbury and Batley, and so it turned out she must have gone on and refereed a second half of a game at Workington for Jamie Lee, who come off with a nosebleed. But she has actually obviously wasn't appointed to that game. And I think there is a difference to being appointed to the game. So she was certainly the first female to officiate a professional game, a domestic professional game here in the UK. As you rightly said, there were two female match officials in the refereeing in the World Cup, but that's at the international level.
I think the main thing I've taken away from the picture of them all lined up before the match is, how tall is that touch judge? There's a really tall touch judge. It's like everyone's at the same height, and there's a massively tall touch judge, which is superb. I mean, he certainly shouldn't be able to miss the goals when they go over. He's got a very good view of the goal. So whoever you are, Mr. Touch Judge, sir, well done on your career in touch judging. I don't know where I'm going from this. what happened else in the Challenge Cup this week? Catalans 6, Huddersfield 34. Again, a game we haven't seen, Phil, but Huddersfield are back. What's this, 4 wins in a row now? We should have trusted the process. And who was the man of the match? It was himself, Jake Connor, running the show, showing us we don't know anything about rugby league.
I've only seen the tries. Again, it does seem bizarre that we had a round where you could see 2 games in full and the other 2 you had to guess what was happening. And Jake Connor is either scoring or involved in every single try. So you could see why he was the most influential man on the field. And when he is, his confidence is up. He's an extremely talented player. They were talking about enjoying the conditions, that, you know, it was warm and the pitch was firm and encouraged them to play rugby, which you know, is great. And you know, long may that continue. Obviously, we're hoping for a deluge on Friday night at Headingley now. No, I'm joking. I think the interesting thing is what we don't know, because A, we don't play, and B, coaches don't see it in training, is how much the games the week before take out of teams. And the minute you say that, you're immediately detracting from what was an absolutely brilliant Huddersfield performance that none of us predicted. But you do wonder if that St. Helens Catalan game that was incredibly intense the week before meant that there was nothing left in the tank. I don't think that in any way detracts from the way Huddersfield went about their business. And I just think that, again, we can't judge them yet until they've faced sterner tests than they have over the last three weeks in Super League. But this marker at Catalan is a really significant one. If they can kick on from that, then yes, we look at the league table and have gone, oh, they're underperforming. But, you know, we've always said it's early in the season. You cannot read too much into it. This might be the catalyst that a very talented Huddersfield team starts to fulfil their potential. And it might be they've had some growing pains to get to where they are because they've got some new players in key positions as well. And Ian Watson has been working out, is Jake Connor best at fullback or is he in the centre? Or do we have Tui Lola here at standoff? Now, what happens when Ollie Russell comes in? All of that takes a bit of working out. Adam Clune, the new halfback. Maybe this is the time where we're getting to see the real Huddersfield. And if we are, that was one hell of a performance.
And who did they play this week? Leeds. So get the T-shirts at the ready. Leeds in crisis.
Yeah. I've ordered plane, and hopefully they were delayed back by 35 hours from Catalonia.
I don't think many people would have predicted it. And the dominance, clearly I've not watched the game, but the dominance of the performance would suggest, and certainly from the scoreline, that they were dominant in that game. 16-0 up at half time or thereabouts. Away in Catalan is never easy. I'm looking at, I was just looking at the team that Catalan put out. They had a strong side out there. So I think you're right. Whether they're a little bit undercooked coming off the back of that game the week before, and perhaps expected to win. But I think what I saw from this, I mean, I watched the OKR game in detail. I saw not much of the Warrington Saints game, unfortunately, for personal circumstances. But what I saw was an intensity to the games, certainly in those two games, where it showed that actually the Challenge Cup does matter. And it certainly does matter when you're at the quarterfinal stage, because you win that game, you're through to a semi, and then suddenly you're in the final. So I think you saw an increase in intensity to those games. And, you know, if you're putting a pre-season target down to win a trophy, the Challenge Cup is potentially an easier route to a trophy, because you've only got two or three games to win to do it.
And what a fun game that was on Saturday evening between Hull KR and Leeds. Loads of points, loads of stuff going on. Fans in the crowd making gestures behind players. That's always good. And it was a good old-fashioned Rugby League Challenge Cup tie. And as it turns out, Hull KR putting to bed last year's final result and all this and that and the other. But they were the better team on the day, Phil, and deservedly take their place in the semi-finals again.
Nothing to do with last year's final and all of these revenge headlines. Absolute nonsense. If you gave OKR the opportunity to win at Wembley or win in the quarterfinal the following year, they would have won at Wembley. But a performance of two halves, wasn't it? The first half, they seemed nervy. The level of expectation was there. Lee still with some injuries. Matt Moylan moved to fullback. You thought, man, I wonder how Lee... Nothing to lose, came out in the first half and were by far the better team. But there is a resilience about Hull KR, and when they started to get it right, they were too strong. I felt really sorry for Zach Hardacre, because I think, you know, he made three mistakes, two of which led to tries. And I think the other thing we've seen in some of the cup ties in this particular round is the players know when the game has gone. And in a winner-take-all game, once it's gone, and there's nothing you can do to bring it back, then naturally I think your propensity is to just say it's gone, we need to look to next week, we need to preserve ourselves. And there was a period, I think halfway through that second half, where you just got the feeling that Lee knew that they weren't going to retain their trophy, which again, not taking anything away from Hull KR, I thought second half they were very smart, played the game interestingly against the wind rather than using the wind in the first half. But kicked well. Once they got on top, got a stranglehold on the game. And it was a more comprehensive performance, perhaps even than the final scoreline.
I think we should take the credit for last week, pointing out that Hull KR's second halves have been poor. And then this week they come out and win. So again, it's down to us. This podcast has influence. Anyone listening believes that they are stupid. Quarterfinals of the Women's Challenge Cup. York beat Featherstone 70-0. They beat them the other week by 80. So the bookmakers actually were closer this week, which is good because I didn't back it. Wigan 44, Cardiff 4, St Helens 74, Huddersfield 0, Leeds 70, Warrington 10. I mean, that would be a concern, Phil, going into this week's game at Headingley, between Leeds and Huddersfield, because Leeds and Saints should probably put on a similar pedestal. Huddersfield, who've done lots of talking in statements, but need to back that up on the field now. Not that they haven't got good players, of course, but that's a big result for a team in the same division.
Yeah, but Huddersfield did win at Leeds last year, so they won't be lacking in confidence. I went to the Leeds-Warrington women's quarterfinal. And Leeds can certainly play better. I mean, they racked up 70 points against a very gallant Warrington team that suffered a couple of injuries and certainly never gave up. But the disparity in standard between the very top women's teams and those that will be fighting out towards the bottom of Super League is still great. I think Leeds have got three or four players to come back of note, but it was almost if they spread the ball wide, they were going to score. And the other thing about Warrington that I still have not yet worked out, and that's mainly because I have no idea about anything, is they came out to warm up 50 minutes before the game. So the backs came out, I think, with 50 minutes to go. The forwards with 40 minutes to go. We watched the warm-up and thought, goodness me, they're either the fittest team in the league or they're going to tire in the last 10 or 15 minutes of the game. And that is what happened. But, you know, their coach knows their players far better than I do. I was just, you know, observing. But it seemed to me they put a hell of a lot of effort into warming up and ran out of steam towards the end of the game. But yeah, no surprises. The semis look interesting. They're going to run alongside the men. So you think that the Wigan women will play at the same time as the Wigan men, because obviously you're guaranteed, double bubble with the crowd. It's exciting. I don't think it told us anything we didn't know.
So this week we've got Leeds versus Huddersfield. It's the first weekend of the Women's Super League. Warrington versus Featherstone on Sunday. Also on Friday, it's Wigan versus Barrow, which is being played at the JGB. DW. It's been played in Jamie Jones Buchanan's back garden. And on Sunday, on the Sportsman, York versus St Helens. So that's a good way of kicking things off. And it's not often we say well done to a team called from Hereford who wins a Rugby League Trophy, Phil, but they won the Rugby League Challenge Trophy, which is a qualifier, if you will, for the Challenge Cup as well. But a trophy they won in Golden Point. I saw the video footage from John Seeger on Twitter, and what a finish. That was a drop goal to win it.
Looked like a great tournament, the Challenge Trophy. The two finalists get to play in the Challenge Cup in, I think it's a fortnight's time. So not only well done Hereford, I think they get to go to Leeds, but the other team that made the final lost in that Golden Point was Edinburgh in their first ever tournament. They get to play London Roosters, but that is massive improvement and development in Scotland, which is only to be welcomed, and hats off to Martin Gill and what he's done at Edinburgh.
Is there any other news before we get on to the Championship stroke, League One stroke, everything else that happened this weekend?
Well, there's one thing I was going to mention, which we kind of skipped across, was just that we mentioned that the other two games in the Men's Challenge Cup were not on TV, but we've still got our league, haven't we? And we've got Super League Plus. Obviously, there are games that have been on the Sportsman. Presumably, they didn't want to give it away for free to the Sportsman.
I think I read that there's a certain point where they cover it and then the BBC takes over or something, or they get the exclusivity. So it is a shame that we're so used to now, after having had 3 months of all the games on, that we really now, when there's not all the games on, we miss them.
I think that has to be something that they need to look at. I'm sure they are doing for next year, doesn't it?
The good news is from France, Toulouse have got a TV deal for the rest of the season for their home games. So you would assume it would be a smart idea for Super League Plus or whatever to piggyback off that and provide those games on the app as they did with the York game the other week. But whether they do that or not, I don't know. But it would seem like a simple thing to do. Speaking of the Championship, I'm waiting for the point where some disgruntled York fans say, why are we putting so much money into Women's Rugby League when our men's team are bottom of the table and haven't won a game yet? Wakefield winning there 50 points to 6. Featherstone winning at Doncaster 46-4. Batley winning away at Whitehaven 25-12. I'd love to see Whitehaven's disciplinary policy. Barrow 27, Dewsbury 20. What a comeback for Widnes, by the way. Losing at half-time to Halifax, but winning 40 points to 14. Some second-half performance from the Vikings. Swinton 4, Sheffield 22. And another defeat for Toulouse, two in a row, losing 19-12 away at the Bulls.
Yeah, I think it's shaping up to be as competitive a division as we thought, but I don't think any of us had Widnes joint top. Wakefield certainly fulfilling their potential. Widnes, great start to the season, as have Sheffield. We've sort of underestimated what they might do this year, although it's only early. And I would be slightly concerned if it was York, the only team that haven't now picked up a win. But the manner of that defeat would indicate that, I know they've got a few injuries, that it could be a longer season for them than they expected.
It's a bit of a strange one, is York. They seem to have flattered to deceived for a couple of seasons, really. I don't know what the answer is there. Obviously, they brought in Andrew Henderson, didn't they? And they brought in this year, they brought in Paul Cook. So I think, you know, I'm yet to hear or see that view in relation to the spend on the women's team, which would be minimal. But it wouldn't surprise me if it does rear its head. But certainly, you know, as a York fan, you'd be asking questions, wouldn't you?
Well, you wonder now how much was put in Richie Myler. How much, going back to the start of the programme, much do you think they were going to get out of him throughout the season? Because obviously he was a big-name signing, was he, when he signed, but was injured and obviously hasn't. Was he played twice, once? Didn't work out in that sense.
I think the other thing is that we saw this with York last year, didn't we? That they started the season with a run of defeats, but then they came home with the wettest of sails. So it's not all over yet by a very long way. But good result for Bradford, I think, against Toulouse. Again, quietly, slowly making progress under Eamon O'Carroll. Seem to be getting the team on the field that they actually want, which is less to do with taking players on dual reg. So, I think it's shaping up to be the competition that we hoped it would be, arguably the most competitive of all three.
And we are only four games in fairness to York, and the teams above them in the table, I think there's three of them with 2 points apiece. So, five teams above them with one win. So, it's very early in the season. This weekend's games see Toulouse host Whitehaven, if they can get players on the plane. Batley versus Wakefield, Halifax, Sheffield, Swinton, Dewsbury, Featherstone, Widnes. So that'll be a big test for Rovers, won't it? Barrow versus Doncaster, and York host the Bulls. So we'll see how those games go over the weekend. League One, Rochdale unsurprisingly beating Newcastle 68-4. Keighley 22-6 over North Wales. Midlands, gutting, nearly beating Hunslet. On the road in Sheffield, but losing in the end 30 points to 26, and Oldham 46, Cornwall 10. So I think, in fairness to Cornwall, I think we were concerned about that game last week because of how much you'd expect that score line to go in favour of the home team, but they kept it as tight as you could hope.
Again, I think Midlands' result is probably the most encouraging. It took a try in the very last minute for Hunslet to win that one, and you'd hope the gap would close. You maybe think that, you know, Cornwall, we anticipated a bit of a hiding at Oldham and not getting it. Maybe, you know, they're building into the season a little bit. I know that they've lost a couple of players, but you know, they're, again, quite hopeful that they'll improve on last year. An interesting division to keep an eye on, but there does seem to be a predictability about that isn't in the Championship a little bit.
The Cougars, though, James, they're up there 4-4 still.
Yeah, I was just going to say that the Crusaders game against Keith, that was 6-4 at half time. So I think that was probably tighter than that. Maybe that scoreline, the final score at 22-6, suggests. And you know, the way that the North Wales Crusaders finished last season, you'd expect them to be one of the stronger sides in the comp this year. So the Cougars are doing well, and they've just announced this week that their patron of their club is. India Willoughby. Nearly forgot her first name, so apologies, India. Yeah, and I think they're the first. I don't know if their first sports club to have a transsexual as the patron of their club. So again, they're sort of leading the way in the inclusion sector.
They are indeed, which I'm sure will annoy the wrong kind of people, not the right kind of people on social media, which is always good to do so. Alderman Keighley, top of the table, 4-4. North Wales and Hunslet with three wins, Hunslet having paid the game more. This weekend's fixtures in that division sees Rochdale travel to North Wales, so that'll be a good one. Newcastle is the venue for the Cougars. Hunslet hosts Workington, and Cornwall are at home to Midlands. So have I got the right fixtures there? Yes, I think I have. I'm trying to use the RFL website and confusing myself, but that's my own fault rather than the Rugby Football League. I have to point that out. Is that it? Is there anything else to talk about? I've already been through everything. And it's not quite the same when we're not in the same building, but I feel like there's nothing else happened. We spoke about Hull for a long time again. I feel we jinxed Catalans by talking about last week and then they lose. And I feel like kind of that's my fault that they lost to Huddersfield in the Cup. Not that Huddersfield were great and Catalan, it's my fault. And I feel sad. I hope no one in the south of France or Catalan land is a he's blaming me for that.
The biggest downside to Zoom anyway is the lack of biscuits, isn't it?
Well, yeah. So
he's going to I need to go and open the cupboard and see what's in the back of the cupboard.
Have we got any
I'd have shared it with you, but you're not here.
I'll tell you what we discovered on Sunday at my mum's, that Harris knows where the biscuit tin is. So off he went, opened the cupboard, got the biscuit tin out, opened the biscuit tin lid, got the biscuit out, put the tin lid back on and put it back in the cupboard, all captured on camera. It was fantastic.
Talk about a chip off the old block.
Excellent. He's been trained very well.
Well, I'm sure we'll be back next week at some point to talk more rugby league, which will be all exciting and stuff. But James, thank you. Phil, thank you. Buy the magazine, tier prop, and we'll catch you next week for more exciting red hot rugby league chat here on 4020 live, not live, and also on rugbyleague.com. Go to rugbyleague.com. Sports Social Podcast Network.